When was the last time you connected with your long-distance best friend, your mentor, your college roommate? With Minted, turning your iPhone photo into a Christmas or holiday card has never looked better. Simply choose a card design from an independent artist, customize the color, shape, and greeting, and Minted will address your envelopes for free. Use code PODCAST for 20% off your holiday card order.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Transport commentator and consultant to the RIAC is with me in studio. Good morning, Connor.
Good morning, Pat. Hi.
We want to talk about EVs and the fact that sales are not going well, not just in Ireland, but across Europe. And we want to know why. And then also the attitude towards the Chinese vehicles imposing massive tariffs.
Yeah, well, it's a big EU conversation. And in fact, at the Paris Motor Show this week, various European car makers were commenting on it, as was Ursula von der Leyen. The EU voted at the start of October to apply very significant tariffs on Chinese EVs. Now, they haven't implemented them yet. It's all in negotiation, but in theory, up to a 45% tariff on Chinese EVs, because they're crying foul. They're saying the Chinese state is over-subsidising them. In the meantime, the European EV industry is lagging.
Why
is a big question.
I mean, they're all producing lots of models. The Paris Motor Show is a great example of that.
They are. The models are all expensive. We're not quite getting the same degree. Volkswagen are spending a fortune on it to their credit. Volvo are investing heavily, but both have pulled back on their targets. There's three big centres for EVs. You've China, the US and Europe. And of that big three, Europe is conspicuously in third place. Now, the European governments are part of the problem here because they've been chipping away at incentives for EVs. And EV sales have fallen as a market share across Europe, but where countries have withdrawn subsidies, like Germany, like Ireland, the fall off has been even more severe. And you contrast with a country like Norway, which has made a tremendous success of it, 90% plus market share for EVs in Norway.
Yeah, and they have loads of free energy. I mean, they've loads of oil, number one, which they sell to the world.
Yeah.
And they've loads of hydro.
Yeah, and they've a sovereign wealth fund to die for. What can you do? But in the meantime, on EVs, they give EV buyers all sorts of goodies. Half-price ferry journeys, free tolls, low road tax, all sorts of incentives designed to switch the population to EVs, which the population did. Here in Ireland, we kind of started that process, but the government's been whittling away at it.
Why?
Why
the
is
lack of imagination
question.
On the part of Eamon Ryan?
Not just Eamon Ryan, because the malaise seems to spread across Europe. And it seems to be that they're losing the strategic vision. The purpose here is to switch from fossil fuels to electric vehicles. I mean, we all know the reasons why. In Europe, it seems to be switch from fossil fuels to electric vehicles, but only if they're European electric vehicles, and be prepared to pay a bit more for them. And that's just slowing down the adoption curve.
So is this protectionism?
I think it is. I think it's smacks of protectionism. And look, it's a bit of a protectionist world these days. There are massive, if you think about those Chinese EV cars, the Chinese have got the ability to make a lot of batteries, more than they can use. There's 100% tariffs on those going into the USA and Canada. There are some tariffs coming into Europe, and the EU's talking about lifting them more. Incidentally, the German car industry is totally against it because they think that the countermeasures will block them out of the Chinese market.
Yeah.
So escalating tariffs is not really in anybody's interest when the strategic plan is to get us all to move to electric vehicles. European Commission seems to think only if they're European electric vehicles.
Mm. And what is the evidence about the Chinese government playing unfairly with the whole market by subsidizing the Chinese manufacturers?
Yeah, well, there's huge Chinese subsidies in the manufacture of the batteries themselves and across all sorts of technical headings. And even if you Google it, you'll see that some of the information the European Commission was drawing on, I mean, it's like a legalistic document as thick as your arm, citing all sorts of technical this, that and the other. But in outline, what they're saying is that the Chinese government is pumping an awful lot of money into these industries and that the retailing Chinese brand is therefore at an unfair advantage vis-a-vis the European equivalents.
I heard a Volkswagen executive about a year ago, I'd say, talking about the onslaught of the Chinese coming into Europe. And he said, we've been there before. We've had the Japanese onslaught and we ended up, changing our strategy, etc., and thriving. Then we had the Korean onslaught. We ended up, you know, meeting fire with fire, and we survived that onslaught, and we will survive the Chinese onslaught. But it doesn't seem right if you depend on Big Brother in Brussels to do that fight for you.
I mean, you have to start the fight. I mean, those fights are never ultimately won with the triumph of protectionism. That's not what happens. What happens is that the new technology is spurred by innovation and competition and becomes universal, and ultimately we hope we all benefit. Now, there's loads of criticisms you could make of big capitalism and all that, of course. But if you look at the quality of electric vehicles that are available now, you know, they are ready to replace the fossil fuel fleet. They really are, in terms of the quality that they can offer.
I see more and more of the cars on offer at the top of the range, in other words, the biggest battery, more and more of them are on the 600 kilometres plus, which takes a lot of range anxiety out of the way.
It does, and you're almost doing away with the need for the public charging network. I think eventually the public charging network will be a bit like the emergency phones on the motorways. You know, there had to be one every X number of kilometres with an SOS marking on it. And I presume they probably still work. But in the days of mobile phones, they're not something that people need. And maybe the public charging network will be like that, because whenever you go to sleep at night, your electric car can get all the charge it's ever going to need.
The Chinese have done extraordinary things to try and get their population to drive electric, those who can afford a car in the first place. Bring us back to the Japanese and how they accelerated the development of their own auto industry.
Yeah, well, if you go back to the 70s and 80s, the world leader for innovation in car making was Japan. It's still huge now, but I mean, batons maybe passed to China. But everybody was talking about Japan, and Japanese cars of tremendous quality flooded into the European and US markets.
Now often the finishes were not what Europe was used to, but the reliability was splendid.
Was absolutely superb. And then, you know, when the EU comes on the scene, similar in the US, we then get type approval regulations, so it all has to be standardised. But the Japanese cars were fantastically innovative. You may recall also second-hand Japanese imports coming into the Irish market, because the cars were right-hand drive. And, you know, the Japanese are not above a bit of artificial market shenanigans themselves. At that time in Japan, their local equivalent of the NCT test was absolutely ludicrous. Was utterly vigorous. It included a shake test for the vehicle, and it was deliberate. They wanted the cars to fail, so the Japanese consumer had to buy a new Japanese car to keep the whole conveyor belt
and
flowing.
And presumably the price was right as well.
And the price was right as well. And the old car is very difficult to keep on the road. Hence, you know, a fleet of those old cars wound up being sold to places like Australia, New Zealand and Ireland, because they were right-hand drive. So, you know, big countries and big governments backing their big industries will do protectionist things. And as I say, ultimately, when the market succeeds, it's because those barriers break down. And right now in the European Union, it feels to me more like a protectionist strategy than remembering that your overall strategy is to get switched to EVs for the sake of the climate.
Now, our listeners are always very inventive when we talk about these things. Norway pay for every incentive by selling the rest of the world their oil and gas. We sold ours and now we buy it back. This one. On the EV sea border, Ireland should adopt right-hand drive cars like our European brother motorists. This would negate VRT and nullify the need for an Irish sea EV border, as the UK cars would be left-hand drive. We're talking about left-hand drive is what they drive in Europe.
Yeah.
And we have right-hand drive.
Yeah, and that's not going to change. I mean, it's about 20% of the world's population. It's an interesting story in itself how it came about, but there's no fix that's not going to work.
And also, you're crossing the border and you cross the other side of the road.
Oh, back and forth on the island of Ireland, you absolutely couldn't.
Let's see. How about we get rid of VRT on EVs to encourage sales?
Yeah, well, it's reduced VRT, but then it starts creeping up again. And that's exactly the problem. So it's not a consistent signal sent to the consumer. The downstream problem is if you remove taxes on EVs, you lose the tax revenue. And that's part of the
problem. But are they serious about climate or not?
Well, this is it, yeah. I mean, you forget that, you know, these are tactics, and your strategy is to get us off fossil fuels. EVs is the way to do it, in a huge, huge contributing factor.
The disposal of lithium batteries will be the next environmental problem, as well as the problem of mining lithium, another natural resource.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And already happening. It's the new oil in ways. And you know, there's lots going on there, and the social justice of it and the inequalities and much, much, much that could be addressed. And not to mention the carbon cost of mining the stuff. And it's a big question.
Now, when it comes to something like car batteries, I presume there will be an industry around recycling all of those, taking the materials that are still good and putting them back into something. The lithium problem goes down to vapes. You know, disposable vapes with the tiny lithium batteries and all those lithium batteries in remote controls maybe that we throw away.
And lithium is precious. Lithium is precious. You know, a bit like the copper out of an old television set 30, 40 years ago, there's value in that. And, you know, if it's economically viable to mine for lithium in a obscure part of the world, then surely you can mine for lithium out of the waste that we have here.
Now, this one, I bought my first EV in January of 2023, sold it recently for less than half of what I originally paid for it. The real-world mileage of the car is significantly less than the manufacturer states. This is the range he's talking about. The charge network is abysmal. I was left waiting on most of the few occasions I needed to charge publicly. I desperately want to stop using fossil fuels, but this has cost me thousands. I fear my second-hand, unintended purchase of a plug-in hybrid will have to do for years to come. The whole thing is just smoke and mirrors. Now, this is a problem about range. I mean,
yeah, it's a disappointing experience. But right now, EV are a brilliant option, but think it through. There are users, there are usage cases. If you have to do a lot of country driving, if you think you're going to be using, like we got a new EV in our household around about the same time. It has never plugged into the public charging network. It's never going to need to. It's primarily a second.
And if you were going to the west of Ireland,
take the old diesel.
You'd take the old diesel.
And that is one of the inhibitors. Also, you need to be able to plug it in at home. So there's challenges around apartment living, city living, etc. So there are plenty of people out there who would love to go EV, but when they tot up the pros and cons, they go, oh, you know, that's a pity. It's not for me just yet. But there's loads and loads of people for whom it's perfect. And as I say, if they can do it in Norway and get to 95% nearly of new car sales, there's clearly an awful lot more we can do here. We're below 15% and dropping.
Now, the point is, in the secondhand market, the prices may be deflated because of a lot of the talk that goes around them. But there are many people out there, if they went onto the secondhand car sites, they would find a vehicle looking at their own pattern. If they're only doing the school run, a bit of shopping, not going here to visit granny, whatever it is, but not driving to Donegal every second day, they could get a real bargain.
For really good value. And look, it's always been the case that a new car drops a huge chunk in value. The first owner is the one who really takes the hit. And EVs, well, as I say, the market is maturing. And I agree with you, Pat, there's really good value out there for the right usage case, which is most of us most of the time.
Increase the warranty on the battery, which is causing the dumping of vehicles before reaching the warranty of 100,000 kilometres, or 8 years typically would be the battery.
Batteries, as the market is maturing, batteries are actually outperforming people's expectations in the real world.
And
turns
they don't
out
drop
they're
dead.
No,
you know,
don't.
You'll have a number of cells within the battery that may stop functioning, but you still maybe have 90% of battery use after 12, 13, 14 years.
Yeah, and you know, on your internal combustion engine car, you'll have a similar performance change. And so, as I say, well within tolerance and working fine.
Now, why has the cost of a new car risen so much in the last decade? I bought a new car in 2010, and when I bought a new car, a similar sized one, the price had nearly doubled in that period. That's from Phil.
Yeah, well, there is general inflation. And so I'm not sure specifically whether as a kind of a proportion of your income it's up that
normally
much.
Normally, I use the monitor of the price of the pint. Like, what did a pint cost in 2010?
Yeah.
And what does it cost now?
Yeah, it's a reasonable benchmark to take, isn't it? I think one of the things, though, and we've discussed this before, unhealthy trend of making cars larger and larger and larger. They're making them too big so they can charge more. And we should curtail that trend.
Yeah. And most of the increase in size is air.
Yeah, and it's of no value, particularly in an urban setting.
Okay, lithium batteries are likely to be replaced with some other chemistry based on sodium or aluminium, which don't have the same property, the same extraction issues. You know, they're cleaner industries in terms of extraction. Existing batteries will have a second or third life as home storage, so no need to recycle for years. And people are doing that. Old
Yeah, maybe so. And look, lithium is, well, lithium is obviously an element and all that, but the practical use of a lithium battery is only about, what, 40 years ago with the first camcorders, and now we have electric cars. I'm not sure what the next generation of technology is. Maybe it'll completely solve all the lithium issues. Maybe it'll create a whole series of other issues.
But there are lots of new battery technologies on the way.
Yeah.
And they're promising a 1,000-kilometre range battery, and they're promising charging in maybe less than 10 minutes from 20% to 100%. The only issue they have to do when you're putting that much power into a relatively small space in the battery in 10 minutes, you may have heating issues.
Yeah, but those are all engineering things that I'm sure we can fix. I mean, petrol explodes if you're not careful with it, but we know how to manage it.
Conor, thank you very much for joining us. Conor Faulkner, who is a transport consultant and consultant to the RIAC. Thank you very much for joining us. Now,
the Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.